sahanavavatu, sahanavavatu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
First ten.
Vayur yataiko bhuvanam pravishtaha. Vayur yataiko bhuvanam pravishtaha. Rupam rupam pratirupo bhabhuva. Rupam rupam pratirupo bhabhuva. Ekastata sarva bhutantaratma. Ekastata sarva bhutantaratma. Rupam rupam pratirupo bahischa. Rupam rupam pratirupo bahischa. Vayuhu yatha ekaha bhuvanam pravishtaha rupam rupam pratirupo bhabhuva. Ekastata sarva bhutantaratma. Rupam rupam pratirupaha vahihi cha. Okay. Mm-hmm. So here, this verse 10 is almost identical to verse 9. Verse 9 is using Agni, mm-hmm. Verse 10 is using Vayu. So Vayu means the wind. What would be the wind for the Samishtyupadi for Ishwara? The Vayu is the wind. For the Jivupadi, it's the prana. So here, Vayuhu yata, just as Vayuhu, that's 1-1. 1-1 means Namata, singular. Okay. Vayuhu, this is how Michika teaches it in India. We used to always say like 1-1 would be Namata, singular, which is what it is, that 1-1's kind of a shortcut. So Vayuhu yata eka. Vayuhu means the wind. Yata, just as. Ekaha, just as the wind is ekaha, is one. Vayu yata ekaha, bhuvanam pravishtaha, has entered the whole bhuvana, means it pervades the whole world. Okay, just as the wind, which is one, pervades the entire world. Rupam rupam, or you could say, just as the one wind has entered or is present in the world, pravishtaha. Pravishtaha actually means entered. So just as when the creation comes into being, the wind or the air, the vayu is the air, the wind is pervades everything, one wind pervades everything. But then, so the wind which is one, which is pervading or has entered into the earth, the whole loka, this loka, this world. Rupam rupam prati rupaha babhuva. But this one wind which is to be found everywhere, it takes on, it becomes babhuva. It has become pratirupaha rupam rupam, means for every form, rupam rupam rupam. Rupam is form, so this rupa, this rupa, this rupa, this rupa. When you do a duplication of a word like that, rupam rupam, it means every rupa. Okay, so rupam rupam pratirupaha. So the wind taking the form of every form, it assumes the form of every form. So in terms of the jiva, the wind is the prana, vayu is the prana. And so there are many types of prana. There's the prana and the apana, right? You know, and then there's the samana, the digestive system, and the vyana, circulatory system, and the udana. It's the same prana, pushing the soul out of the body at the time of death. So the prana itself, wind itself, takes many, many different forms, but it's only one wind, it's only one prana in reference to the jiva. And that's what he's using here. Prana atmana deheshu anupravishtaha. So he says the rupa, the wind is the prana, takes on the form of, takes on the form following every deha, every body. The prana will enter every body and then take on the form of the body and take on all of the individual forms of prana within the individual body. So you say, well, there are many pranas. Each one of us has our own prana. And prana itself takes on many forms in terms of the digestive system, the circulatory system, that which provides that type of energy. Okay, so it appears to be many, but then it says, this wind which is one, the vayu which is one, takes on so many forms and takes on the form, it appears to be in the form of the form it's associated with. So he says, ekaha tata, similarly, ekaha sarvabhutantaratma, similarly the atma, which is inside of every being, sarvabhutantara atma. So sarvabhuta is every being, all beings. Antara, inside, atma. So similarly, the one atma, which is their indwelling, every being, rupam rupam pratirupaha. It takes on the form of every being. Because yourself, yourself, you have a self, you have a self, you have a self. And as an Ajnani, being an Ajnani, if you were an Ajnani, you take yourself to be now in the form of this body, or in the form of your mind, or in the form of the vritti. So your being takes on the form of your upadhi. Another way you can say it is, for each individual, the atma, from the standpoint of the body-mind-sense organs, has many different points of identification, right? And so just as the same for every individual, the self takes on many forms. You take on the form of your mind, that's an upadhi, I am thinking, I am feeling. You take on the form of your prana, I am breathing, or not. You take on the form of the physical body, I am this body. So the atma, which abides in every being, the one atma which abides in every being, takes on the form of each being. Okay? But then it gives this key word. It takes on the form of every being, bahishche, bahishcha, and it is outside. So that's the thing. The Atma, if the Atma itself being one, assumes the form of every being, is the self, sarva, sarva bhutat antara atma, the self which is inside of every being as the aham, right, as the conscious being. If the one Atma is inside as the self of every being, it also has to be on the outside. Right? It has to transcend. So when we say on the outside, it has to transcend. Because if I say that this self that I am is the Atma that you are, then this I has to transcend this body, mind, sense organs. It can't be contained in the body, mind, sense organs like a little pea in the pod. It has to be something which is the what we call the adhishtana of even time and space, of space itself. Otherwise, there's no way that I can be you. Because we're not talking about twins, right? It's not about twins like I am the same as you. That's in the Sankhya, the conscious Purusha, which is Satchit, the Satchit Purusha that I have. Is different than the Satchit Purusha that you have. We all have our own Satchit Purusha. That's Sankhya. And this physical world is real. It's absolutely real. It has its own being, its own existence, its own reality. And each Purusha has its own little reality. That's not Vedanta at all. Vedanta makes mincemeat out of that. Destroys it completely. For logical reasons. So, what that means is a little Mahavakya here, just as exactly the same as in the previous verse. It also ended with Bahishcha. But what it means is for this me to be the self in all beings, the self in all beings, that me has to be all pervasive of even space. Right? And so the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, and all the elementals have to have the Atma as their adhishtana. Adhishtana, because it is the self of all beings. It's not like a limitless self and then a creation over here. Because the self that I am, this Atma that I am, that is inside me, is also pervasive to this body in the sense from the Sukshma Sharira. All of these, the body, the mind, the sense organs, become upadhis for me. But there's this whole body, mind, sense organs enjoys consciousness. Right, so I am this conscious being in this form. That's why rupam, rupam, rupam. But you're in the same situation, rupam, 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 right? For your being, but your being is innermost. Through the Driktrisha Viveka, for each one of us, for the seer seeing differentiation, that Viveka, you recognize that your being, the self, is the most pervasive and the innermost. Most pervasive because just like the physical body is pervaded by the prana, you know, and the prana is pervaded by the manas, and the manas is pervaded by the buddhi, right? The atma pervades the buddhi. Right? And so if the atma pervades and is innermost to the buddhi pervades and is innermost to the manas pervades and is innermost to the prana pervades and is innermost to the physical body, then this atma, if it is innermost and pervasive, then it is also free of and independent of. It's interesting. Even when you think of in the buddhi, then this is something that we make use of in terms for antikarana shuddhi. Your buddhi is innermost and pervades the manas. The buddhi objectifies the manas, right? And the buddhi objectifies the manas, can talk to the manas, can stop the manas, can also be overwhelmed by the manas. But the buddhi is the one that can control and is innermost to the manas. Right? And so even being overwhelmed by the manas, it can get a little corner and objectify the manas. The manas doesn't objectify anything. It's just an overwhelming experience that the buddhi comes into relationship. It's a vritti-vyapti. The manas is what brings about this vritti-vyapti. Vritti-vyapti means that it pervades the manas is what is pervaded by the experience. Just let me just make clear that I haven't made this maybe clear in this context before. When I perceive something, like if I'm perceiving this room right now through my eyes, the vritti-vyapti means that this experience pervades the manas, which is objectified by the buddhi. The buddhi can comment upon that vritti-vyapti. You understand? Mm-hmm. So if you think of the manas as that which is the experiences pervade the manas, now think of it in terms of emotions. So an emotion which really rises from the unconscious, it's triggered by something, but it arises through the unconscious, it pervades the manas, right? The buddhi can talk about that state of experience. The manas is not talking about it, it's the vritti-vyapti. It's what's filling, it's the experience that is filling the vritti. So that's the manas is what we call that the manas. But if you have to think of it as vritti-vyapti. And the pola-vyapti, right, is the consciousness, and that's going to be more the buddhi, but it's really the consciousness which is coming into relationship with that manas that is pervading. The manas doesn't really do anything other than that. And so that manas can be so pervading that it kind of drowns out the buddhi also, but the buddhi has the capacity to objectify it, right, and to change it, to transform it, you know, to talk to it, to bring it under its control, to control it, or to even when we're doing contemplation, right, the manas is brought into the manas does the vritti-vyapti, right, because it's just pure. It's not doing anything else. The manas, when we do the working with a given prakriya, like the Driktrisha Viveka, for instance, when we're taking the mind step by step by step experientially, step by step by step to becoming, recognizing the different upadis, until finally you just get to the buddhi, and then you get to the very self of the buddhi, you know, at that time when you're at the very recognizing, turning the buddhi or the mind, we can say, toward the atma, there's a vritti-vyapti that takes place. Right? The vritti-vyapti that takes place means, what is the content of that vritti? When it's turned toward the self, it's being directed, right, through the Driktrisha Viveka, see or seeing. But when it gets to that place where it is turned toward the atma, then the atma is pervading that vritti. That's what we mean by vritti-vyapti. If the Atma is pervading the vritti, there's nowhere, there's no further to go. There's nowhere else we can go. There's no need, and it really can't be now. The Atma pervades the vritti, and now we're supposed to have awareness illumine the vritti. But that's all. That's already happened. And so we take that vritti vyapi to the farthest extent that it can be taken. And because we've taken it to the very nature of the subject, now there's no consciousness necessary to illumine that vritti vyapti, because the content of the vritti is consciousness. And so consciousness does not need to illumine consciousness. And so that's why there's no pala vyapti necessary. So when we get to that most subtle place where the vritti vyapti is taking place and there's just me as conscious being, now there is, in my experience, no upadhi. There's not an experience of any upadhi, because what is filling the vritti is its own adhishtana. The mitya vritti is being filled by its own adhishtana, which is the thing that is actually there by its own self. Now, when that happens, there's no subject-object relationship. There's no objectification taking place, because you've resolved the mind into the consciousness which is necessary for objectifying the vritti. Right? So now it's just consciousness objectifying consciousness, so there's no subject experience of any subject-object relation. So that is as far as you can go. And now when you get to that place, there is no duality. And so it's that one, that adhishtana, which is not only the self of all beings, but the self of the whole creation, because there, as the adhishtana, right, it has no, there's no further back you can go, and there's no objectification either. There's just limitlessness. That's not even the right word. There's non-duality. There is just a conscious being. Now when you come back from that, kind of in the ripple effect, coming back, okay, then there's the conscious me, same, the non-dual conscious me, and we're coming back, that's illumining the buddhi, that it's illumining the manas, that it's illumining the pranas, illumining the sense organs, it's illumining the body, is illumining the world. But when you get back, when you go back to the nature of this one self, it's non-dual. Because everything else is mitya, everything else is objectified and exists within time and space. But when you get to that which is more subtle than even space, there's no more room. If space itself is objectified and part of mitya, there's no way to separate one self from another self. You can only do that from the standpoint of mitya, where there is time and space. But when you're just at consciousness itself, there's no upadhi. There's no time, there's no space, there's no body, mind, sense organs, there's no creation. And so all of the duality that we experience exists in the creation, right? Not consciousness. Consciousness doesn't exist in the creation. Consciousness is what we call the adhishtana of the creation. It means it's the being that is actually there, that is free of time, is free from free of space, and so therefore free of change, free of birth, and free of death. That's the being of this creation. But that being, the being of the creation, is me, is my being. There's only one me. But the me experience, the me, this me, which is non-objectifiable but is self-evident as conscious me itself, this me can't be divided. Because to divide it, this me would have to be one of the upadhis or one of the objects within time and space. So, just as this me, this one self, is the Atma, is the Sarvabhutantara Atma, the Atma which is inside of all beings, the innermost to all beings, this one Atma which is innermost to all beings, takes on the form as the Adhishtana, it takes on the form of everything within Mitya. This is all such shit. There's no experience that's away from conscious being. That's the adhishtana. You can't even conceive of an experience that does not exist and is not known. Non-exist, okay, that's gone. Think of having an experience which is not known. It's not possible. That's the sat-chit. That sat-chit is non-objectifiable as an object, but all objects enjoy it. So that's that rupam, rupam, pratirupam, right? This one atma, as though takes on all of these forms, but is bahischa, but it is transcendent of all of the forms. From the standpoint of the forms, it's taking on all of these upadis, all of these dresses, right? But from the standpoint of itself, it's outside. This innermost, that which is innermost is outside. It has to be inside and outside because it's all pervasive. Otherwise it can't be the one self that is there in all beings. So this question comes up now after giving two verses just like this. They're kind of Mahavakya verses. The question is, yeah, but he says, you know, if that's true, if for the one self, that if there's the self is only one, but that one self is the self of every being. Okay, if that's so, then for that one supreme self, samsara dukkhitvam is there. The dukkha of samsara. That person, that one self, is going to be mega, a mega dukkha. It's going to be the mega samsari because every single being that it's the self of suffers. Right? They're all suffering. So that's the question that comes up there. And so he says, that's what you're logically could arrive at, this conclusion. So he says, in order to answer that, he does this next verse. So let's do this, verse 11. Suryo yata sarvalokasya chakshuhu. Suryo yata sarvalokasya chakshuhu. Nalipyate chakshushair bahya doshaihi. Nalipyate chakshushair bahya doshaihi. Ekastata sarva bhutantaratma. Ekastata sarva bhutantaratma. Nalipyate loka dukkhena bahyaha. Nalipyate loka dukkhena bahyaha. Just suryaha yata sarva lokasya chakshuhu nalipyate chakshushaihi bahyadoshaihi ekaha tata sarva bhuta antara atma sarva bhuta antara atma nalipyate loka dukkhena bahyaha. So he says suryaha 1-1 yata. Just as the sun, sarvalokasya chakshuhu, is the eye, just as the sun is the one eye for all of the sarvalokas, all the people, lokas people as well as worlds. So just as the sun is the one eye for all of the people, for all people, and just as that sun, nalipyate, is not stained. Lipyate means to stain. So that sun, which is the eye for all of the people, nalipyate, is not stained chakshushaihi bahyadoshaihi by those defects or faults that belong. Chakshusha means chakshu, means eye. Chakshusha, that which belongs to the eye. So just as the sun is not stained or tainted in any way by defects which belong to the eye itself, like say your eye is jaundiced or your eye sees double, okay? It's not like the sun is seeing double, right? The eyes, because of the eyes, you're seeing double, but the sun is not seeing double, okay? Or by the defects that are bahya. So you have some defects that Shankara says in his bhasha. They're brought about by some papas. So you're born with bad eyes somehow. Okay? That's what papa karma, it's adhyatmika. It's an adhyatmika problem that you have to suffer because you have these problematic eyes. Or you could be walking along, and then what Shankara says here, these bahya doshas, you could to be running into a bunch of feces and urine.
What happened?
Walking along, and then in the gutter or something, there's a bunch of urine and feces. Okay. That's his example. And what I do. That's what you would say. You would just say some dirty stuff. But Shankara says it. He thinks of some horrible thing, you know.
And but says, wasn't that the reality?
Yeah, sure. It is. So you would have to, you would be seeing that going, you know, like you did. You're seeing that going, you know. But Surya is just providing the light because of which these upadis, the sense organs, experience all of this. They experience their own defects, right? The eyes, if they're defective, they will suffer those defects. You'll see the examples they use are be having jaundice, and so everything is now yellow that you see. It's because the person's eyes are jaundiced. They have jaundice, they see it all yellow. Or they have a cataract. And so they look up the moon, they see two moons. Wherever they look, they see two of them everywhere. That's some papa that you have to exhaust, that papa. Okay? Or it's a papa that's brought about by some sort of papa that you have to walk by all of this horrible stuff, you know? And then you have these awful experiences. So either adhyatmika, you know, or adibhautika, horrible things that you would not want to even see. You have to see those things. But the sun is absolutely free of those experiences. It's only because of the sun that your eyes work. But your eyes have the problem, you know? Your eyes experience the papa, or the ugly, horrible thing, or whatever it is. They experience it, not the sun. The sun is totally free of that. So he says, ekaha tata sarva bhutantara atma. So similarly, the one self, which is innermost to all beings, sarva bhuta antara atma, the one self which is innermost to all beings, nalipyate, it is not stained, loka dukena, by the problems of the world or by the problems of the people, of the individuals, right? By the dukkha, it's not affected, you know. It's not affected. It's not stained. It's not touched by the dukkha of the people, by the dukkha of the world, or the dukkha of the loka. It's referring to the people. And then it says, it, that one self, which is the self of all beings, is bahyaha, it transcends it, like the sun. It is not touched by the problems of the people, by the problems of the eyes, for instance. So it's a beautiful example, actually. So how is it not touched? Well, the sun is such a wonderful example because because of it, everything is experienced. Without the sun, this world is not available to you, to your vision. You can't experience the world without the sun. Your eyes won't function. Right? You need light for the eyes to function. But the light itself is pure. Nothing, it doesn't have, it's not, itself is free of those upadis. Because of it, the upadis work. Because of it, the sense organs work, right, or the eyes work. But it itself is totally free of those upadis. So it doesn't even have the experience. It doesn't have the experience. The Atma, like that, your Atma, the self, is always the same. It doesn't even have the experience of the suffering. It doesn't even know there's suffering there. Nothing is happening. Right? That's why in the Brahma Sutras they say, Brahman, yourself, the Atma, is free of all dukkha, of all duality. The standpoint of your being, it doesn't even exist. It's not simply not there. There's no access. It's the very being of all duality, but it itself has no experience of it. Okay? And so in that way, the Atma is superior to Ishvara. Because Ishvara has what we call a dukkhalesha, you know. So say dukkhalesha means it has a, it
Ishwar has a little experience of dukkha, because dukkha exists in the world. Even though there's no identification with the upadhi, still dukkha exists in the world. So for instance, say you go to a movie and you watch the movie and you're not identified with anyone in the movie. You're obviously not that person in the movie. You're not that situation in the movie. But your compassion or your emotions are touched by the movie, even though you know very clearly you're not the movie. So that's more samsara than Ishwara would have. But we say is that since suffering exists in the world, that experience is part of the Ishwara upadhi, so Ishwara is not completely free of it, even though there's no identification, even though it's mithya, even though from the standpoint of Ishwara there's no ajnanam at all, there's only the vikshepa shakti, that which projects the world. But nevertheless, that sukha and dukkha exist as part of the universe. And so therefore there's a dukkalesha, just a slight experience of dukkha from the standpoint of Ishwara's upadhi. From the standpoint of the Atma, there's no dukkalesha. There's just a satchit ananda of my being. And that is true for Ishwara when the Ishwara upadhi is there, and that is true for you when the jiva upadhi is there. The suffering belongs to the upadhi. The Atma is always free of that suffering. Completely free. There's not even a dukkalesha. There's a dukkalesha from the standpoint of the upadhi, not from the standpoint of the self. And so what that means is that no matter what the experience that you're having, sukha or dukkha, the nature of your being remains totally untouched and totally free, as it is. The lesha of dukkha, the dukkha is something that belongs to the upadhi, as is the sukha. Atma is ananda, and because of the shantavritti in the mind, it can be brought about by the fulfillment of a desire, that mind will enjoy from its own standpoint as though like a reflection of ananda, and that's variegated, you know, and it can be a lot of ananda, a little bit of ananda, or compassion, or joy, just differentiated forms of ananda brought about by the vritti. When all of those, even though all the sukha vrittis, this variety of sukha vrittis are experienced, the Atma is not experiencing that sukha vritti. The Atma is the ananda which these various types of vrittis enjoy, reflect, or resonate with. But the Atma isn't becoming more happy or changing in its quality of ananda. The being of the ananda of myself is always exactly the same. It's never touched in any way by any experience whatsoever, positive or negative. So that's important to know, because we think, well, if we could think about getting enlightened, I'm getting enlightened as though I'm kind of on the hierarchical, this person is a little more enlightened than me. But you either have knowledge or you don't. You can have different types of vrittis. You can say, maybe you could say, well, you know what, this person, well, both of us are enlightened. Both of us enlightened. Both of us have self-knowledge. No doubt about it. But you know what, this person, because of their karma, their prior birth or whatever, they get to have a little bit more sukha. And the sukha in their mind. They seem to just have a lot more shanti than I do. But that's only from the standpoint of the vrittis. That's not from the standpoint of me. That's not from the standpoint of my knowledge. You know, well, maybe they have a little bit more antakarana shuddhi. It's the standpoint of the antakarana, not the standpoint of me. You can never say that about yourself. You can never say that about your knowledge. You can compare upadhis if you want to. This person's upadhi, still they have a better upadhi than I do. Swamiji was saying this kind of stupid stuff, and just as a joke. Because you know? They're all Ishwara upadhis. Every upadhi is Ishwara. You know? There's an infinite, absolutely infinite number of upadis, and every single upadi has its place. So every upadi has an equal place in the creation. Not a better place or a worse place. It has an equal place because it's part of the whole. You know, you can't take, you used to use an example of some sort of big machine. Imagine a big machine, you know, that's running and has all of these parts. And the little bolt, you know, the little screw on the bolt. What do you call those bolt things that go?
Nut?
Yeah, the little nut on the bolt. Thinks I'm just a little nut. I don't mean anything to anybody. I'm just a little nut on this. Nobody even knows about me. And I'm just going to loosen myself and fall off. But then if the little nut gets loosened and falls off, then the machine doesn't work anymore. You know? But every single part, you know, is equally important, but some have a bigger footprint. So we can think, the little nut can think, you know, that big crane that sticks out of this whole machine is so much bigger than, stronger than me. I'm just this little nut. But actually, every part is equally important for the whole, from the standpoint of the whole. So that's a beautiful thing, too. Swamiji will tell a lot of kind of funny stories around this kind of thing, but it's so important, actually, because every part of the creation is Ishvara, including you. Every single part of it is Ishvara and part of the whole. So it doesn't make sense to say, well, these parts of Ishvara are better than these parts of Ishvara. Have you ever had a hangnail or a toothache? You know, those hangnails and toothaches become really important parts. And they require immediate loving attention. Every part is important. Every person is important. So it's just a beautiful heart. That's what Swamiji has said. In the end, your heart has to be as big as Ishvara. Because that's the truth. You are Ishvara. That is the truth. You know, so a lot of funny things have to be given up with this knowledge. It takes time for all the stuff to drop off, and all the little hurts and pains that we have and complexes we have. And you have to be patient. That's a, we all have to be patient and enjoy that process of maturing. So, you know, Swamiji uses that example of the little boy. Well, it's this little rosebud, you know, and he wants it to turn into a rose. He wants to see what it will look like when it finally blooms. And he's very impatient, and he just watches and watches, and it's not happening, you know, fast enough. And so then he thinks, well, let me just turn a little bit. And he starts pulling all of these leaves and this poor little bud. He pulls it all open until now we have this poor little tiny screwed up rosebud, you know, that was not allowed to grow. It wasn't allowed to grow and to become a flower because of impatience. You should always think of that example. You have to love just the natural growth that takes place with knowledge and with how to own up all the different means for antakarana shuddhi we have, you know, to just be patient, you know, you work on this, and you work on this, and you work on these things that are kind of, it's not that you don't have knowledge, but these things are not, they are not resonant with your knowledge, and so you'll work on that. You don't have any choice, because it's those things are painful. You know, like if you had a pain in your body, you're going to work on it. Do your best to relieve the body of that pain. If your mind is causing you pain because of a dharma or just your complexes or whatever, you will work on it because it's painful. And so the body and the mind, the psyche, naturally go to work on those things that need some help. The pain is as a cry for help, the body's cry for help, or the mind's cry for help. And so you naturally go to it. Just like, unless you're totally beaten down by your own pain, if something is in pain in the world, you naturally go to it. Mm. Sometimes we don't do that because we're overwhelmed by our own pain and we can't. But if you're in a normal condition, you automatically will go to help the other person. It's just what is a normal. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who Ishwara is. It's normal behavior. Sometimes we're too burdened ourselves to be able to do that. So anyway, what do you do? Mm-hmm. That's a nice verse. I'm going to stop here because the other verse is too big. The energy to do it. Swasti Pajabhya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashubhamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyaha Prativi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamsho Varahitaha Brahmanah santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve padrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityor ma amritam gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.
Hi Virginia. Ira. Hi, Ira.
Ira?
Good.
I don't know if it's just coming out of my own mind, but I think I heard you say that Atma doesn't experience anything. It doesn't experience the creation.
Right, from its own standpoint. From the standpoint of the upadhi, it does. From the standpoint of the maya upadhi, that experience is there. So just think about if you... This can be tricky. It's an important understanding, though.
Yeah.
As long as the maya is there, the maya is experienced because of the sattva running through it. But the consciousness that is the sat-chit, the conscious being of the mind from its own standpoint is only conscious being. It's not a knower. In order to know, in order to see, you have to have eyes. Even right now, if you weren't to have your eyes, you wouldn't see. You need the upadhi to have the experience. Right? If you didn't have a thought, there would be no experience of a thought. Right? So the knowership itself doesn't belong to Brahman. The knownness, consciousness, is Brahman. But the consciousness, in reference to the upadhi, to the or the sattva, the sense organs and the mind, that consciousness is the knownness which the vritti enjoys. Right? But the consciousness or the knownness is just that, consciousness. It's not it's not a knower. For the knower, the upadhi has to be there, like a mind, the mind or the sense organs. That's what gives the experience of knowership in the vritti. Just think about this, without a vritti, what's there to be known? And without a means of knowledge, how would you know it? Like if you get rid of all the five sense organs, there's no perception of the world or this physical body. If you get rid of the mind, say for instance the mind is in deep sleep, there's no subject-object experience at all. Because subject-object depends upon the upadhi. From the standpoint of me, it's not that there's no experience, there's the experience of the self, which is just conscious being, ananda, satchit ananda. But it's not satchit ananda as a knower of the one who is knowing the vritti. The vritti is known. And the because of vritti vyapti, right, vritti vyapti means whatever experiences are filling the vritti from the different means of knowledge that we have and the types of vrittis that the mind itself is capable of having, for instance, means not generated by the sense organs. So that would be the citta, the mind is able to have memory, it's the citta, it has the ahankara, it has the buddhi, you know, it has just the natural fluctuating mind of the manas, emotions and then it has imaginal experiences. All of these types of things are not generated at the moment by sense perception. See what I mean? So those vrittis themselves, the vrittis that the mind can generate on its own, and the vrittis that are generated by the five sense organs, those are the experiences that the mind could have. Each one of those experiences is illumined by one non-dual conscious being, which is me. And so if once you realize that yourself is not a knower, but it's just conscious being, which is the me experience actually, then you can actually at all times notice there's me and there is the experience, the vritti. And the vrittis are many and varied. So there is just me as I am and vrittis. There's me as I am and the whole emotional gamut. Yeah? But always, at all times, no matter what the emotion is or what the perception is, the me is not covered. I am not covered. Just like the sun can be illuminating. This is actually a really wonderful example. The sun can be illuminating, you know, dark rain clouds. Dark rain clouds with lightning and you know, torrents of rain, but the sun is not getting wet. From the standpoint of the sun, it's just an illuminate. It's not illumining the rain clouds. It is a luminary. And because the sun is up and the storm is taking place, the clouds are illumined. Not because the sun is illumining it as a verb. Because it's illumination itself, it's light itself, these things get illumined. But from the standpoint of the sun, it's just the sun. It's the light. See what I mean? So the sun's not a knower, but it's of the rain clouds, but because of the sun, the rain clouds are illumined.
Yeah, I think I understand that the Atma is luminous and it's a luminary. But at the same time, I'll still, and I I think I caught it. But at the same time, I think that I'm experiencing this creation.
Well, you are.
That belongs where?
No, you are experiencing this creation through your sense organs. Through your five sense organs are allowing you to experience this creation. And the different types of vrittis in the mind can generate, like the emotions and the imagination, the ahankara, retrieving memories. Those are the experiences that are there. So those are experiences you are having, right? But when I say you are having, what do I really mean? It means the vrittis are taking place. And because of me, those vrittis are known. And so they are experienced without a knower. Because there's experience, because they are experienced, just because of our language, say, I am the knower of that. But actually, all the experiences are just known. And the knownness is me. The self-evident me. And so I am the self-evident me, always there as the light, because of which the experiences are known. And so then I say, well, I am the knower of the experience. But upon analysis, what you realize is that there's not a knower of the experience. It's the self-evident me, which is known by nature, because self-evident, that knownness, the vritti enjoys. So the vritti becomes known. And then I say, I am the knower of the vritti. But actually, the self is known and the vritti is known. The knownness of the self, the vritti enjoys. So the knownness of the self never ever changes, no matter what the vritti is. The self-evident me never changes at all.
And so that knownness doesn't have any individuality. I mean, I keep seeing individuality.
Well, I'll tell you what the problem with that language is that then you say, oh, then I don't really have any individuality. You are the individual. You have complete individuality. It's just that you are the you that is the one, you are the one non-dual individual. And that one non-dual individual is you.
Well, wait a minute, and you're an individual.
No. The upadis are all different, but the me, what makes me, my sense of me, is me. But there's only one of me. And that one is absolutely unique and is absolutely me. Mm. See, the what makes you, your sense of self, is Brahman. There's only one self, and that self is me.
And so the uniqueness belongs to Brahman.
The me is, when you have the me experience that makes you, if I got rid of your body and your mind and your sense organs, and the universe, this me that makes you, was still there. Your sense of me is not dependent upon any upadhi or on the universe or on Ishwara.
Kiki! I'm so glad to see you online. That's a treat.
What does the word vyapya mean?
Pervasion. It is pervaded, vyapya. Vyapya is having pervaded, it's indeclinable past participle.
Mm-hmm.
Vyapti means pervasion. So vritti vyapti, it is pervaded by the vritti. Vritti vyapti.
Doesn't pula mean like results? Or like
pula vyapti?
Mm-hmm.
The pula vyapti means that which is pervaded, the pula, the fruit of that vritti vyapti, is that it is known.
Okay.
Right? You can have a vritti vyapti, but if there's no consciousness, then what? So there's no knownness to it. So the vritti vyapti takes place, but then it happens simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But say the vritti vyapti takes place, but there's no consciousness, then what is that? The vritti vyapti takes place because the mind, the instrument, the mind, takes on the form of whatever the content is, and then that content, the pola, is that it's now known, right? But that requires consciousness. Mm-hmm. So these two full things are necessary. The vritti has to take on the content, which needs to be illumined by consciousness. So they happen simultaneously, but both things are necessary. You need the consciousness there, which is which illumines the vritti, and you need the content of the vritti in order for there to be any knowledge.
So the fruit is not the vritti.
No, the vritti requires consciousness to be known.
Yeah. Right. And which one is the fruit?
Well, the vritti has to take place, yeah, so that the vritti pervades something, and then the fruit of that is that it is known. So you have to have a vritti for something to be known. But for it to be known, you need the consciousness. But if there's consciousness without a vritti, then there's nothing there to be known. So the vritti has to be there, and then that vritti is known. Right? So without the luminary, the vritti is not useful.
But isn't the content of the vritti consciousness anyway?
But the thing is that, so vritti vyapti is when the vritti is taking on the shape of whatever is, say with the five sense organs we use, whatever is being perceived through the sense organs becomes the content of the vritti in terms of nama rupa, okay? Mm-hmm. The other content of the vritti is the consciousness, the adhishtana, the consciousness, because of which that nama rupa, which is the vritti vyapti, is known.
That seems almost strange to me to divide it into two parts like that.
But they only do it as a teaching methodology to make you understand what happens, because this is just a way of explaining what happens when we have a subject-object relationship with the world, as opposed to what happens when we gain knowledge. Because when we gain knowledge, what happens is that the vritti vyapti, which is normally something that we gain, the content of the vritti is given to us by some sort of perception. Okay? But when you're gaining self-knowledge, the vritti vyapti means the vritti is has the self for its object. That's what fills the vritti.
Yeah.
Now when that happens, there is no pala vyapti necessary, because that's already the vritti vyapti is resolved into the consciousness, and so there's no other consciousness necessary to illumine it.
Yeah.
So there's this one, and that's why there's now not a subject-object relationship, because usually you have consciousness which is illumining this content that is mithya other than consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So here the vritti vyapti is of consciousness itself. Now there's going to be no subject-object relationship, there's just consciousness.
I see, yeah. Yeah.
So that's why these vritti vyapti and pola vyapti, these terms are only used in order, really, to explain, to differentiate how self-knowledge takes place versus knowledge within samsara, within duality.
But like say somebody's a jnani and they're having vrittis of objects. But at the same time they can be aware of themselves, of the self, right? So, I mean...
Oh, but that's a good question. That's because the self-experience doesn't require any vritti at all.
Yeah.
It's always self-evident.
I see.
So but every vritti of anything other than the self requires consciousness to illumine the vritti.
Yeah. So the other thing you were really talking about, a knowledge vritti in a sense, I mean, like the vritti that gives knowledge.
Oh. Yeah.
So I have a question about that. It seems to me that what you would have with self-knowledge is the pala vyapti without a vritti vyapti. I'm for some reason,
oh,
it makes more
you
sense
know,
to me that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, but that's not right. It's not right, because when we're talking about gaining knowledge, self-knowledge, you have to have, the mind has to have a removal of ignorance, so to speak. Because even for every single person, the nature of the self is always there exactly in the same way, lending its consciousness as though to every vritti. But But there's always going to be vritti-vyapti and pala-vyapti happening because you need the consciousness, you need both the consciousness and the nama-rupa. So the vritti-vyapti gives the nama-rupa, name and form, consciousness gives the knownness to make that object known. So you need both of these happening, okay? When you have self-knowledge, then the vritti-vyapti is of the self. Right, it's following. It has for its content only the self. That's because the pramana is directing the mind in that way, and all of a sudden, the mind is now turned, has been turned toward the self.
Mm-hmm.
So the vritti-vyapti is of the self, and so the pala-vyapti is not necessary because the vritti-vyapti itself is now pure consciousness. Okay, so that's how knowledge takes place in terms of self-knowledge.
Isn't that the definition of pala-vyapti, though?
No, because pala-vyapti is consciousness in reference to a vritti which has nama-rupa. That nama-rupa content
is
not luminous, so it requires
it's
consciousness.
It's defined as something that illumines. It's, so self-illumination is not included in that definition.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. When the vritti-vyapti, how that's how knowledge takes place in samsara, in duality. But when it's self-knowledge, the vritti-vyapti has for its content not nama-rupa, but consciousness itself. And so consciousness need not illumine consciousness.
Yeah.
It's almost like they merge.
They merge in the sense that the vritti is turned only toward its own being. And so any type of nama-rupa is not there. And so the only thing there really is consciousness. So there's no subject-object experience. So now, once that has been recognized, the conscious being that you are, right, now is recognized that because self-evident, I recognize self-evident me, self-shining me, I am always there exactly the same way. And then the vrittis go on changing and taking place where the vritti-vyapti is this and this and this and this, but I'm just remaining the self-evident me, and there's a viveka between self-evident me and whatever the vritti happens to be. And that means that all of these vrittis can be any vritti. It can be a dukkha vritti, it can be a sukha vritti, it can be any vritti. The problem is, for us, is that the dukkha vrittis are like having a hangnail or something. We don't want those dukkha vrittis, but you don't feel like you're an ajnani just because you're having a dukkha vritti. because the self is still always the same. But the dukkha vrittis are not natural for us. Dukkha vrittis are jiva srishti born of ajnanam. They don't go along with my own nature. And so just like, you know, so you want to cure them. That's why antakarna shuddhi, another thing. When we say antakarna shuddhi, it's purity of mind. That really... When we say a pure mind, this is very misleading. When we say antakarna shuddhi, what we're talking about is a mind that is capable of gaining this knowledge. You know, with the sadhana chatushtaya, means the fourfold sadhanas that are necessary for the mind to be able to gain knowledge. That's the viveka, vairagya, and all of these, you know, the samadhi, shakti, mumukshu, from all of these. Okay, so that's the antakarana shuddhi. It's necessary, that's why we call upayanishta. Upayanishta means that commitment to the means of knowledge, which is the antakarana now. It's got to take place in the mind. So that mind has to be of a certain quality to be able to gain this knowledge. It has to have a certain amount of subtlety, of shanti, of peace, of being able to remain still while all these words are flowing, you know, not running off here and running off there and worry about this, worry about that, so you don't get anything, you know. So that's the antakarna shuddhi. Now when this knowledge takes place, there's still leftover raga dveshas, you know, likes and dislikes, that are binding likes and dislikes, and attitudinal things and complexes inside that continue to rise up in the light of your knowledge. You know? And some of them you can just dismiss, they don't bother you that much, but others cause pain. And so it's natural, you need to learn, even in spite of your knowledge, you need to know how to deal with those things in order to release the mind from them, especially in conscious material, like complexes and things like that.
The
cry for help. Also, we add that in the 20th century, 21st century, we've added all of that, these complexes and unconscious problems. Without those unconscious problems, then it just becomes Dharma the Dharma. Mm-hmm. Understanding Dharma. And the Amani Tuama, Dambi Tuama, Himsa, Kshanti, Adarjavam, all of these things that are listed in, for instance, in chapter 13, like verse 5 through 9, I think it is. They list all of them. And Swamiji's written about all of those, value of values. It's all cognitive psychology. It's all Dharma, you know. And honesty, Satyam, Vada, always tell the truth, all of these things, you know. So that book is such a valuable book.
It seems like there are situations where dukkha vrittis can be very helpful, though, in a couple of different ways. For one, it's kind of easy to know yourself when you're having a sukha vritti. But then if you also find, well, what is that is also there when I'm having a dukkha vritti?
Absolutely.
That's the viveka. You've just done it.
I totally agree.
And then the other thing,
dukkha vrittis are great for that.
Yeah. And then like a tapas practice, if you can find who you are in the middle of dukkha vrittis, yeah, that's just... It's like Nididhyasana.
Yeah, absolutely. I even say the same thing. I teach that exactly like that.
I've probably heard you say it. That's where it's coming
from. Whatever.
The world seems so small and these days, and you seem to be bombarded by a huge, huge experiences that you wouldn't have had in India like 500 years ago, because it would have been quiet.
Yeah, that's
so we have a different kind of
true, but there were a lot of other types of dukkhas there and
oh, that's true. More disease and insects.
A lot more disease and insects and all kinds of natural
threats. So you think it was equally intense then?
We're in Kali Yuga now, so it's much more intense in terms of a dharma. But then if you look at if you look at the Mahabharata and the Ramayana,
that's right.
The Devas and Asuras
so
are still going.
Going on.
They're still going after each other, you know. The Asuras and the Devas.
Well, they had that war and everybody got killed.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
They had Duryodhana, now we have Trump.
We had Duryodhana, They had Duryodhana and we've got Trump.
But
who'd Rama have? What's that? Ravana.
Ravana.
Ravana was really nasty. Really
nasty.
Yeah,
but
it shows every era has its...
You know what? That war, it was senseless if they all got killed. What's the point in it?
I don't know how to answer that for you.
Well, yeah. I haven't answered it either. But I mean, senseless.
End of the yoga. Okay. Om Tat Sat. Go ahead.
So the transition, this is just a little technical thing.
Yeah.
Between verse 10 and 11, mm-hmm. and you talked about this, and it's in the book about that there's this, somehow what was said in verse 10 means that there's a possibility one could interpret that Brahman is the source of sorrowfulness in the world.
No, because because you already know, but if somebody's listening to that verse being unfolded, they can say, well, they're taking the self to be a knower. Okay, so if I, taking myself to be a knower, am the self in all beings, and all beings are experiencing a lot of dukkha, then wouldn't that be overwhelming, that poor Atma, which is Brahman, yeah. would be having the experience of all the dukkha of the world?
Oh, okay.
That's
sort of simplistic,
yeah.
straw man.
Yes,
yeah.
okay. But it's because you already know. Because okay. say you didn't know that, and you were just thinking, you're new to Vedanta, and you're thinking, to still thinking of yourself as a knower, which is actually kind of a big thing to get over that. To realize that the self is not a knower, not the knower. But you think, okay, I am the self in all beings. If that's true, you know, then wouldn't I have a huge amount of dukkha? There's so many arguments that you already know to just knock that out of the water immediately. But if you didn't already have all of those arguments that got rid of that kind of a notion, then that this verse answers that, mm-hmm. that notion.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, there are hundreds and hundreds of notions, and everybody has their own path through them all. And so with this one, you're thinking, well, why would anybody have that? That doesn't make any sense. Well, it doesn't make any sense for many, many, many different understandings that knock that off, but you already have those understandings, so it's not a...
And I have my share of misunderstandings.
Yeah, and then when that comes around, it will go, ah, I remember all the times when, oh, that's what... Then all these things become clear. One thing becomes clear and it's just trickle down. Other things become clear because of that one thing becoming clear. A bouncing ball. All right, everybody.